is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, I'm Dan Krikorian.
And I'm Patrick Carney.
And we're Slapping Glass. And you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years, and now with its integrated web platform, coaches have the ability to add video to plays and share them directly to their players' Android and iPhones via their mobile app. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. In addition to a great product, they also provide basketball coaching content and resources through their blog and PlayBank. For access to these plays and more information, visit FastModelSports.com or follow them on Twitter at FastModel. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. It is time for our weekly NBA podcast. Some interesting things going on around the league. Kyrie Irving is back, Jay.
Yeah, Kyrie's back. He had a press conference today, just in time to play the Cavs two games in a row, Mike. How excited are you? This will be the first time he's played in the Cleveland since 2017 or 2018, right? He played opening night 2018 against the Cavs. All right, well, I guess it was the 2017-2018 season. So he hasn't played in Cleveland since October of 2017, Mike.
That's a long time. That's a long time.
And there'll be some fans. It'll be interesting to see. Tomorrow night, is he going to get booed? Do you boo him? You can't boo a guy who won you an NBA championship. I mean, I guess you theoretically could.
I mean, you theoretically could boo him. I don't think I'd be surprised. Let's put it this way: there'll be at least one person booing.
Yeah, I wouldn't boo him. He's a bizarre dude, but I wouldn't boo him.
Yeah, that's I wouldn't boo him either.
He made the biggest shot in arguably Cavaliers history, right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question. There's no bigger shot in Cavaliers history than that one.
So I hope he doesn't get booed. And I guess we can take this into the conversation with the Nets. I will say this. Harden has looked really, really good on the offensive end of the floor. Durant's looked really good with Harden. They look like they haven't missed a beat. It's like they haven't – they didn't take a six-year hiatus from playing with each other. They look really good. I think it's comical that we're all talking about how they know how to play together and they're so good together and yada yada yada. But as they're doing this, the other team's just dunking the ball on the other side of the court and they're giving up points. Listen, I get it. They're going to score a lot of points, and I don't know if you listened to the mismatch stay on Ringer, but they brought up a good point about D'Antoni, where D'Antonio and one of the Olympics basically said, "I don't care. If they scored 100 points on us, we're going to score 180 or something like that." Like, this is the Steve Nash philosophy is going to be what Mike D'Antoni's philosophy is, and they're going to score lots of points, and they're not going to really care about defense. And listen, when you trot out your final five, likely are going to be your crunch time five are going to be Kyrie, Harden, Durant, DeAndre Jordan, and Jeff Green. Or maybe Joe Harris in place of Jeff Green, or maybe Joe Harris in place of DeAndre Jordan, depending on the matchup.
I don't think DeAndre Jordan's on the floor in crunch time.
Well, he was yesterday.
Well, that's a mistake by Steve Nash.
Against the Bucks, he was in crunch time against the Bucks yesterday. So I'm just saying, when you have the five of them on the floor, the only plus defender has to be Durant, right?
Yeah, Durant can be a plus defender, for sure.
if he, I mean, and we don't really know what's he like. He's just getting back, and he's looked really, really good considering he was out. Okay, he was out the whole last season. I think the extended break for him was good to get fully recovered. But I'm just saying, like,
it's a lot of burden to put on Kevin Durant at this point be the focal point of the offense. And I know that you have Harden and Kyrie. I get it, but it's also, I think, a lot to ask for him to be the focal point of the defense. I think the question with the Nets, and you've heard it from the media, you've read about it. Basically, it's going to come down to, can the Nets defend well enough to be able to win an NBA title against the best teams? Is their defense going to be able to hold up? Are they going to be able to get stops? Offensively, they're going to be able to score. I don't think there's any doubt about that. When you look at Durant and Harden, arguably those are two of the top 10 offensive players in terms of scoring in the history of the league, at least in the regular season. When we talk about,
you had to put that in. You had to put that in there.
I knew you were going to. There's no way I could get away without throwing in some James Harden slander. And Kyrie is, when he's engaged and when he's on, which is most of the time when he's engaged, he's probably, I don't know, you can throw whatever number you want on there, but he's one of the most unstoppable offensive players, certainly in the game today, when he's right. So I don't think offensively they're going to have a huge problem. I haven't watched that closely to see what Harden's doing when he doesn't have the ball, if he's standing around the same way that he was when he was with the Rockets. But if he can get that figured out and just move around a little bit and do some off-ball cutting and not just be completely useless by standing out by half court like he did with the Rockets, then their offense is going to be no problem at all. I don't think you wonder about whether or not the egos fit together and who's going to have to take a step back. I'd say more than likely Kyrie would be the guy that would have to take a step back. But if the Nets are going to play at a super fast pace, which with Mike D'Antoni on your staff and with Steve Nash as your head coach, you'd have to think that they're going to continue to play at a very, very high pace. There's going to be enough possessions and enough shots that all these guys are going to be able to get opportunities to have the ball and be able to score. And so I think with Brooklyn, it's going to come down to, what are they going to do defensively in the highest leverage moments? Are they going to be able to stop teams in the last 3 or 4 minutes when stops become critical? And that'll ultimately, I think, determine their playoff success. Because offensively, again, at least in the regular season, I think that they're going to have no problem scoring against anybody, because there's not many teams that have three defensive players at three different sort of positions that are going to be locked down guys that can guard Durant, Harden, and Kyrie.
Yeah, I agree. I completely agree. And I guess we'll transition really quickly into, so can't, I think now they have to be the over, I, them, it's between them and the Bucks for the coming out of the East, right? Was that what you would say right now? If you had a, if they live up to the expectations that we think that they're going to live up to, true or false, it's got to be between them or the Bucks if you were to take favorites right now, right?
On those, on paper, I think those are the two best teams, yes. I would on paper, and then the other team I think you could throw in there is Philly if Embiid continues to play the way that he's played. I think Philly is maybe a step below those two teams, but if Embiid's playing at this MVP level for the remainder of the year and he plays this way in a playoff series, Philly would be a tough out for sure. Now, I don't know if they can sustain this for the entirety of the year, but yeah, I think Bucks, Nets are probably the two best teams in the East. And I think they're both flawed teams. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that what ails Milwaukee has been well chronicled, and we can get into that a little bit in a second. But Brooklyn, unknown commodity. There's not a tremendous history of these teams coming together and immediately gelling, and especially when you're bringing different people from different places and immediately gelling into a championship roster. You think about the Clippers last year. You think about the first year of the Heat. When these teams come together, they don't necessarily automatically gel into a championship team. And as we chronicled last week, I think I'm going to just use the word again, prickly personalities amongst these three big stars and a first-year head coach. And I know he's got D'Antoni as his right-hand man, but still, I think there's going to be some there's going to be some things to work through at some point in Brooklyn when things start to go a little bit haywire, which we know is going to happen at some point during the season.
It's going to happen when everyone starts to go out and party, Mike.
Well, and it's going to happen in the playoffs when James Harden disappears. So, I don't know. Bucks.
If he disappears, where is he going to be, Mike?
I won't even say. He's going to disappear into his fat suit.
There's no way he was wearing a fat suit, right? He had to have been wearing layers of padding or something along.
Yeah, he was wearing some kind of back brace or one of those.
He wasn't in things that massage
your belly that are going to try to give you a workout by vibrating at your tummy or something. I don't know. That was crazy. That photo though. I mean, if that photo is real. Like, that is the most hilarious photo I think I've ever seen. He seriously looked like he should have been going to Good Burger. Welcome to Good Burger, home of the Good Burger.
How do you know Good Burger, Mike?
Madeline was watching it one night.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe you know Good Burger.
For some reason, she thought that I would enjoy that movie, so I got to
Welcome
sit
to Good Burger, to home of the Good Burger. Can I take your order?
Oh yeah, there you go. So, little Keenan and Kel, my man.
Do you like orange soda?
I do not like orange soda.
Kel loves orange soda.
There you go. I didn't say, I shouldn't say I don't like it. I guess if it was presented to me, I might drink it. I'm not opposed to it, but I wouldn't choose it.
I used to like McDonald's orange soda, and then they took the Hi-C orange away, and now it's Fanta, and it's too. Yeah. It's not as good. All right. Enough about McDonald's. Although, did you see what happened? Let's go college basketball really quickly. Did you see what was happening in Tennessee? Did you see this or no?
No, I didn't
see
this.
So when the recruiting was going on for football, Tennessee recruitment was going on, they were putting money in McDonald's bags and giving it to recruits as they were leaving. So that's why the coach and the AD got fired, by the way.
Crafty.
Oh, yeah. So tonight, Florida stomped on Tennessee's basketball team, and the end game result, they put the final score, and they said – and they wrote, "I'm loving it," with a side grin smile. Florida. I retweeted it, so you should check it out. It's pretty good. And the responses
are
pretty good.
Nice work, Florida.
Applause to Florida. Okay.
Funny. Do you want to score more? Training with the Shoticle is the easiest way to score more. The game is changing, and data scientists are determining the best ways to score. Millions of computer simulations determine where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots and when it's best to use the backboard. The Shoticle provides those highest percentage shots. From beginners to next level athletes, the Shoticle is helping players increase their shooting percentages. Visit Shoticle.com now and start scoring more.
I guess let's transition. The Nets played the Bucks last night, and obviously I thought it was a really good game. I only caught the end of the third through the fourth quarter. It was back and forth. Joe Harris hit a huge three in the fourth quarter. Obviously, Durant made a huge defensive stop and made a big basket at the end of the game. But I think the big thing that I'm taking away, Mike, from this game is, once again, Giannis, fourth quarter. Why are you not guarding the best player on the other team? It's weird.
And I don't – does that come from Giannis? Does it come from Bud? And I know that was the strategy last year, that you want Giannis as the free safety. You want him to be able to swoop in from the weak side, block shots, keep people away from the rim. And obviously Milwaukee in the regular season has been very, very successful with that style of defense and keeping teams away from the basket. But it just seems like when you have a guy who's the reigning defensive player of the year, that in the biggest moments, you would want to have him lock down, or at least attempt to lock down, the other team's best player. And I know, I guess you could say, well, that opens up the basket for James Harden to be able to attack the rim, or for another guy to be able to get inside the lane and get easy shots. Yeah, maybe. But ultimately, I think it's proven time after time after time in the game of basketball that if you can make the second or the third or the fourth best player on a team beat you, you're definitely increasing your odds of having success. So I think in those cases, I'd like to see Giannis on the best player. Like, let's take the best player out to the best of our ability. And let's see what guy number 2, 3, 4, 5 can do. Can those guys beat us? And if they can, you shake their hand and you move on. They're the better team. But it just seems like Bud keeps going to the same. It just seems like the Bucks have the same issues over and over and over again. And it seems like everybody from the media to fans to you and I recognize some of these things that seem really, really simple. Like, hey, let's play Giannis 43 minutes in a playoff game instead of playing him 34.
Hey, Mike. You know what the definition of insanity is, right?
I do. I am well aware.
Mike doing the same thing over and over again and expecting
a different... I thought it was Mike Budenholzer.
No, it's this doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Right? I mean, that's the definition of insanity.
Yeah. I don't get the minutes thing. I don't get the Giannis doesn't guard the best player. Look, I get maybe you don't want Giannis chasing Kevin Durant around for his 31 minutes on the floor, but in big moments, in the fourth quarter for the last 4 minutes or in a playoff game that you have to win, it seems like it's a no-brainer to put the defensive player of the year on the other team's best player if that matchup makes sense. And when they continue to not do that, it just makes you wonder. And then the minutes thing is crazy. Did you see that Karl Malone came out and criticized?
Oh, yeah, Karl Malone, that was on my list of things to bring up to you, was the Karl Malone quote where he's basically
said... It kind of fits here. Go ahead and share it.
It was basically... Well, I had it for the end of the show, Mike, so hold on. Let me pull up my notes. I apologize. Right, do you have the quote? Do you have the quote in front of you?
I don't have it right in front of me, but I can pull it up. I had it a second ago.
Hold on. I was going to pull it up when we got closer to where I had it. Karl Malone says Zion needs to get in better shape or he'll end up being Big Baby Davis. That was to Zion. That wasn't to Giannis.
That's what I'm saying. It was to Zion. Yeah. Zion needs to be averaging like 40 minutes per game. You're a 21-year-old kid. Your blank shouldn't be getting tired.
That was but, right? That was the word there?
Yes, but. It was but. Correct. You're 100% correct.
Yeah, I just want to make sure. But. So listen, I'm not a huge Karl Malone fan. But he's 100% correct. And I think Giannis fits right into this. Giannis is what, 23, 24?
But it just, is that Giannis? Is that Giannis making that decision? That doesn't seem like a Giannis decision. It seems like something that he could overrule on, but it doesn't seem like that's something that he's like, hey, I only want to play 32 minutes a game.
Well, I mean, you're right in that sense, but
at a certain point, I think this is the argument that people were having last spring where there was a lot of anti-Bud rhetoric and there was a lot of, hey, is Giannis going to leave or should Giannis just maybe take more control of the Bucks franchise? And this is a case where it's interesting because when you think about player empowerment, you can have people on both sides of that debate and people don't like it when superstars exercise control over a franchise or a front office or a coach. And yet, in a case like this with Giannis, where you're like, why is he only playing 31 minutes a game? Who is the person behind that decision?
Well, here's the other thing, too.
If it's not Giannis, and Giannis wants to play 40 minutes, it seems like he could play 40 minutes. Well, he'd be like, dude,
he played 40 last night, Mike. So he is creeping up a little bit. Here's the thing, though. It's like, it's not like they're playing a bunch of guys. They're playing 9 guys, but, I mean, when you take Giannis out, who's his replacement? Bryn Forbes? Bobby Portis? Like the thing is this. If you had depth, okay, when I look at a team and I say, see that they have depth, like look at the Lakers. When LeBron comes out, okay, now granted LeBron's older than Giannis, but when LeBron comes out, they have someone suitable to fill in for him. It's like the Bucks don't have a contingency plan. Like you take Giannis out of the game, you're relying on Bobby Portis and Bryn Forbes essentially to eat up his minutes, like backup minutes, and that's just poor planning. And I know, listen, the Cavs had the same issue when LeBron comes out, and it's hard to replace one of the best players in the NBA. I get it. I'm just saying, the Lakers.
Well, the Bucks had to sacrifice some of their depth to be able to get Jrue Holiday. I mean, that's just reality. Now, their depth isn't necessarily replacement for Giannis depth, the guys that they lost, But you're right. There is no contingency plan when he goes out, and it would be very difficult to have one. I think the key is still, one, he's got to play more minutes. And if he plays, and look, I don't want him averaging 40 minutes as a regular season player. That's not what we're saying. In the playoffs, I want him to play 44 minutes, especially in situations where you can be eliminated. In the regular season, he's got to play more than 30 or 31. Although part of that reason why those minutes are so low is because the Bucks last year won and had a huge point differential. So a lot of times he wasn't playing a lot of minutes in the fourth quarter. And that's been the case this year too. They've had a ton of blowout wins in this first quarter of the season. But I think it still comes down to with Giannis. And last night, you and I talked about it before we jumped on, that final play against the Nets, where's Giannis? Bucks are taking it out on the side. You'd think that the two-time MVP, that would be the guy you'd want to get the ball to, but certainly didn't look that way because Giannis was way out on the other side of half court, basically not involved in the play until it came into Middleton, and then he cut. Middleton probably could have actually hit him with a pass, but nonetheless, it just seems like, again, he has to develop some type of go-to move that he can go that he can use.
Not only that, they need to drop a play for him. Like what are they doing? You have arguably the most athletic player in the NBA, and you're not drawing up a play for him.
But I think it speaks to what is his signature go-to move when you've only got whatever 2.1 seconds or whatever it was that was left in the game. What's he going to do when he catches the ball on the perimeter? What's his move? The way he's most effective in the other 47 minutes of the game is going down the floor, the giant Euro steps. He's attacking downhill. He's getting to the rim. Or he's posting up. He's using his footwork. He's going and attacking the rim. In a situation like that where there's only 2.1 seconds and you can send a double team at him and try to make him shoot a tough shot or force him to give the ball up when there isn't very much time, he's got to have something that just becomes unstoppable, that the defense becomes irrelevant. And I used to always say this with Jordan and to a lesser degree, Kobe with the post up and the mid post and then the fadeaway jumper. Like when Jordan shot that shot, he either made it or he missed it. Like what you were doing defensively, it could have been me guarding him or it could have been Clyde Drexler guarding him. It didn't matter. He was either going to make that shot or he was going to miss it. And whatever you did was irrelevant. You think about Kareem Skyhook, even think about, I don't know. I mean, just go through anybody who is a great end-of-game scorer. Those players have a move that they can go to. Dirk's one-legged fadeaway. There's just things that guys can do to get a shot in critical moments. And it just doesn't seem like Giannis at this point still has that signature move. And as a result, last-second play, Giannis is on the other side of half court. They're drawing plays up for Chris Middleton. Look, Chris Middleton's fine, but if you're relying on Chris Middleton to make giant baskets for you through four playoff series to win an NBA championship, I don't think that's the right plan. So Giannis has got to improve. I know his free throw shooting continues to be a huge issue for him.
He shoots worse free throws than LeBron.
Oh, he's way worse. He's way worse. And I think the scary part of the free throws is it's been trending down since the start of his career, and he's now reaching into the point where I know the other night he was 1-for-10. When you're 1-for-10, that's no longer a physical dysfunction with your shot. That has now creeped into your head. When you're 1-for-10, that's not anything you're doing physically wrong. That's something mentally that's preventing you from performing physically. And if shooting free throws starts to get into his head and he starts to be less aggressive going to the basket, that can totally ruin the way he plays. I mean, he can become a totally and completely different player. I think about Antoine Walker, who used to, when he was at Kentucky, would post up and go to the rim, and then he started having free throw problems, and he suddenly became a guy who did nothing but launch threes because he didn't want to go to the free throw line. Rondo was like that for bits and pieces of his career where he just was afraid to get fouled because he didn't want to go to the line. And if you're afraid to go to the line and that gets in your head, it starts to impact and change the way you play. And I hope that doesn't happen for Giannis. I don't want that to happen. But when you're 1-for-10 and you're shooting, I think he may still be above 60%, but if he is, it's barely. And if you're a 60% free throw shooter, if that thing starts to dip much lower, you start getting into territory where I worry about his psyche and whether or not that starts to impact how he plays the game. So there's definitely some things for Giannis and the Bucks to work through. All that being said, I think they're, what, 9-5 maybe?
Yeah.
And they still are right near the top in terms of point differential. And I do think that Jrue Holiday makes them better than what they had. That's still with the caveat that those starters have to play more minutes in the playoffs. Those starters can't be playing 32 minutes a game come playoff time and giving a bunch of minutes to DJ Augustine and Bryn Forbes and Bobby Portis. If you're going to rely on those guys to play big minutes, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah, I completely agree. But you know what, Mike? You know who we can rely on? Our sponsors. And here's a word from them.
Hey, hoopheads. We all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
And we're back, and we're going to talk now about some players that are injured. And Mike, I'm starting to think that they're no longer going to be called the Portland Trailblazers. You know what they're going to be called? The Portland Frailblazers.
All right, so they were the Jailblazers. Now you got them as the Frailblazers. That's probably a good call.
I mean, we got Nurkic. He's out. Wrist injury. I think they said
6 weeks is what I saw.
6 weeks, okay. And then you got CJ McCollum this morning. I wake up and look at my phone, and it says fracture in his foot. He's likely to miss 4 weeks. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, a fracture in your foot? You're only going to miss 4 weeks? That's way too good an outlook, I think. I don't think there's any chance he only misses 4 weeks. So now, basically, you're stuck with here. This is what I think Portland's starting lineup has to involve, Mike. This is not looking good. It's got to be Dame. Is it Hood? Is Rodney Hood the starting shooting guard now? It's got to be, right?
Well,
Covington plays small forward.
Gary Trent. Maybe you start Gary Trent.
Maybe, but he was starting when Covington wasn't playing. So I don't know. Can you put Covington? I guess maybe Trent. So maybe Trent, Covington. And then I think you got to go to Hoodie Mello, man. Who's their backup power forward? I mean, I'm just thinking.
Enes Kanter? Harry Giles?
Enes Kanter's, he had 5 blocks last night, Mike.
Nasir Little?
did you see his post game where they said he had 5 blocks? They interviewed him. He's like, Enes, you had 5 blocks. And he said something along the lines of, I haven't had 5 blocks since I was like 18.
I thought you were going to say can't play Kanter.
No.
Portland's decimated. I mean, you look at what CJ was doing this year. He was averaging almost 27 a game. He was phenomenal. 5 assists. Actually had a better player efficiency rating than Dame, who by himself is averaging, again, 28 points a game and almost 7 assists and 5 rebounds. So he's having a great year. Portland, I think, is a team that if you look at them as a whole, if Zach Collins could stay healthy, which he may become, that might just be part of his name, Zach Collins, if he can stay healthy, just like theoretical Rodney Hood. I can't even call him Rodney Hood.
Man, that team's really got some names, doesn't it, when you think about it?
They do, for sure. So I think Portland is a team that, just like last year, they came together in the bubble when they came back and got healthy. this is a team that I think, if they're healthy, I think they can challenge to get into the top four. But with these injuries, I don't think it's going to happen because, as we talked about when we've done our previews in previous pods, you miss 4 weeks now, and you're missing a lot of games. You're missing a big portion of the season. And I think Portland may, at this point, and they may even have trouble being able to hold on to one of those top eight spots. They could very well find themselves looking at being a 7, 8, 9, 10 seed and being a part of the play-in tournament.
Hey, well, they were successful last year in the play-in tournament.
Until they ran into the Lakers, and then that success quickly, all thoughts of optimism quickly faded away after game one.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't know. I feel bad for them because, like, once again, you said CJ's been having such a good year. And, you know, every time I watch him play, there's been multiple games that I've watched them play, and he's playing like the best player on the floor. It's not Dame. It's him.
He's really good. CJ is really, really good. He's a guy who, because he's not an explosive high flyer, he has more of that old school kind of herky-jerky getting to the basket and just finding his spots. And, you know, he shoots a lot of twos.
You relate to him a lot, Mike.
Look, I like the way the guy plays. Although I'm looking at it, he was averaging 11 threes a game this year. So,
and he's shooting 40. I believe he's shooting 44%.
44%. So
that's crazy. 27. So was it 27.6 or something like that? Points per game.
27.6. He went out 26.7 when he.
Oh, 26.7. So. I inverted the six and the seven. Okay, yeah. So
I mean, he's having a great year. He's always been good, having a great year, and it's a shame that he had to go out. Nurkic is obviously very, very good. Shame to see him go out as well. And hey, all you can do now is just kind of wait until these guys get back. Hope Dame can help you tread water, play 500 basketball, and then as you get your guys back, you try to make a late push to stay out of the play-in tournament. Which is, I think that's Portland's destiny, is to be a 7-10 seed, just because you miss this many games with injuries. I think they're going to have a hard time holding on to, you know, one of those top six spots.
Well, hopefully they can make a late push and do really well. It's better to make a late push than to throw food, right, Mike?
What is it with the Cavs and throwing food?
Well, listen,
chucking the soup. Do we have a report on what kind of food he was throwing?
There was no report. Although as soon as I saw the report and sent it to someone, my friend who's his name's Nick, he sent, I wonder what flavor soup it was this time.
All right, so are you betting on soup?
No, because it was after the game. It was after the game, so I'm thinking it was like some kind of like a sandwich.
Yeah, I'm going turkey sandwich.
A bag of chips.
Turkey sandwich is my thought.
A sandwich or a bag of chips or something like that.
I see the meat like flying out of the sandwich.
Maybe it's an Arby's roast beef sandwich. They are
splatting
sponsors
against,
of the Cavs,
against the locker.
They are sponsors of the Cavs, so maybe it's Arby's roast beef. They have the meats.
It's just too bad. Kevin Porter Jr., I think in all honesty, I looked at the three rookies that were on the Cavs roster last year with Garland, Porter, and Dylan Windler. And, I mean, I know Garland's much improved this year, and we haven't really seen Kevin Porter at all. But coming off of last year or watching last year, I would have said, which guy has the higher upside, Garland or Kevin Porter Jr.? And I would have told you Kevin Porter Jr. But it seems like whatever issues this guy has off the floor, and I don't know that we've ever really, at least I'm not privy to whatever his actual off-the-court issues are, but
well, you know what,
like,
you didn't hear about him, the car accident, Mike. He had the single car accident, and when they came to the car, he was okay, but they found a gun and they found a small amount of marijuana in his car.
I didn't hear about that, but so I guess my point here is that I don't know what his issues are off the floor, but clearly there were red flags before the draft, which is why he fell to the Cavs at number 30. Because talent-wise, I think most people probably said that he was a top 10 player in that draft. And he's clearly a talented player with a lot of skill, but he's also clearly a troubled individual. And so you hope that he gets the help that he needs wherever it is that he ends up, if the Cavs are able to trade him or they just release him. Because there's certainly a basketball talent in there. It's just a matter of, can he get the other things in control off the court that are going to enable him to ever reach his – you know, reach his potential. I think that's a case where it feels like the Cavs have built some good chemistry with the group that they have. And although, you know, I'm not sure with the guys who are actually playing and who's on the roster and whatever, but it does seem like they're together. And so if you bring in a guy who's throwing food at people in the locker room.
How dare you give my locker away to a guy? How dare you? That's what happened. You know that's what happened.
I know. In his defense, though, you probably could tell him. Right?
True.
Like he shouldn't have to walk in there and go to his locker and find out that somebody else's stuff is in there. I guess that would tick me off a little bit, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that I'd start throwing turkey sandwiches, but I wouldn't be happy if I walked in there and my locker was cleared out.
Okay, so what would they have to do for you to throw turkey sandwiches, Mike? That's what I want to know. Now you've opened this can of worms, Mike. What would they have to do to throw turkey sandwiches?
What would the Cavs have to do to get me to throw turkey sandwiches? Man.
Trade for James Harden?
You mean me as a fan? I thought you meant if I played for the team.
Yeah, no, I don't care. Whatever. Either one.
I like the second question better. The first one's a little bit hard to project myself back as a player and figure out what
that was many moons ago. I know it's hard.
Yeah, I don't think as a player there'd be much that you could do to me that would make me throw turkey sandwiches, because I think I'd be pretty coachable and would never get in that situation. So me right now, what would make me throw turkey sandwiches if the Cavs were to do something? You know what? I wouldn't even mind if the Cavs traded for James Harden, because
oh my gosh, I'm gonna fall into my chair.
We don't have a legitimate chance to win the NBA title. If let's put it this way, if we had traded for James Harden in 2018, when we still had a legitimate chance to win an NBA title and LeBron was still here, that would have made me mad. I might have thrown a turkey sandwich then, but now No. I don't know what they'd have to do. I don't know what they'd have to do now. Maybe trade away. Maybe pull a Ted Stepien and just start trading away everything for like Disco Don Ford and some of the other guys that they traded for back in the day when Ted Stepien was running rush.
Stepien rules, man.
Cavaliers. That's right. Yep. You know you're a bad owner when they have rules in place that carry your name because you were such a monumental goofball.
Yep. Hey, I don't know what they would have to do. I think, listen, Amico's reporting, by the way, tonight that he doesn't think that the Kevin Porter things are for sure he's done in Cleveland. I mean,
it seems like that's a situation where, one, if he's that tarnished and the team is putting out that he's throwing turkey sandwiches around the locker room, that it doesn't seem like he'd be easy to trade. And if you did trade him, what could you get for him? Because obviously teams know his history. They know he's a talented player. And now
there's a reason
he
dropped
incident.
To 30 or whatever pick he was, 31 or whatever pick. I don't remember what number exactly.
30. I think he was 30.
30. So there's a reason he dropped to 30, guys. So you're not going to get anything for him. What are you going to get, a second round pick maybe?
Right. So if you're not getting anything from him, and you want him out of there, why wouldn't you just have released him at this point?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it seems like you're not going to get much value for him. Yeah, maybe you can extract a second round pick from somebody, but that seems like that deal would materialize pretty quickly, that there might be a team willing to take a flyer on him. But if that deal hasn't made itself available yet and they haven't just granted him his outright release, then maybe they're going to keep him and try to salvage it. Who knows?
Yep. Well, we'll just have to monitor that and keep on happening. But whatever happens, I really hope that Kevin Porter thrives, Mike.
I do too. And to go along with that, one of our sponsors is Thrive Fantasy. And if you're not familiar with Thrive Fantasy, it's part of the new world of fantasy sports gambling. And what you can do on Thrive is select 10 prop bets that each carry a point total based on their likelihood of happening. And this is all with the top players in the league. So you don't have to go and study the back end of rosters. We're talking about the top 15 or 20 players in the NBA.
So no longer you have to worry about Yogi Ferrell. Rest in peace, Yogi Ferrell.
You do not have to worry about Yogi Ferrell. He will not show up on Thrive Fantasy. So you use promo code HOOPHEADS when you sign up today, and you'll receive an instant deposit match of up to $50 on your first deposit of $20 or more. Download the Thrive Fantasy app on the App Store or Play Store, and by visiting their website, thrivefantasy.com. Sign up and prop up today when you play with the top NBA players on Thrive Fantasy.
All right. So then the other thing I want to talk about with the Cavs, Mike, is, okay, so the Cavs are 6-7. They are in the seventh seed in the East with a record of 6-7. Their next four games are pretty tough. Okay. I'm going to read off the next eight games. I want you to tell me as we go through each of these games, do the Cavs have any shot of winning these games? All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. The Nets.
Are you giving me a home or away?
I can do that. Sure. Right. Home. The next two games are home against the Nets.
I'm going to say they get one of those two games.
Wow. You think they're going to beat?
We got the number three ranked defense in the league, man.
We're down to number three? They're not even number two anymore?
I think last I saw, I thought they were number three.
Well, I know they were number two, but they haven't played since forever. So, and that, I will say this, Mike. This goes back to the, I know we had originally thought these, like, playing two games in a row against the same team was a good idea. Maybe it's a bad idea. Because you're seeing a lot of these back-to-backs getting canceled. So now they're going to have, and by the way, I really would have liked to play the Wizards right now. Those would have been two victories, I think, for the Cavs.
Yeah, the Wizards are pitiful.
So I'm really bummed because they're not healthy. They haven't practiced. It doesn't sound like they're even playing. They haven't even practiced in like almost 2 weeks at this point. They're like the COVID epicenter over there in Washington.
they're in a legitimate quarantine.
Yeah. Okay, so Wednesday and Friday we play the Nets. So you think we're going to get one of those. I'll just put a W next to one and an L next to the other one. Then on Saturday, so we play Friday against the Nets. Oh, no, I lied. On Sunday, we're at Boston. I think that's a loss, right?
That's a loss.
And then on Monday, we are home for the Lakers. That's a loss. And then on – here we go. Here's my stretch of winnable games, I think. We play the Pistons at home.
That's a win.
We play the Knicks again. We're playing them at New York.
I'll give us a win in that one.
Okay. Then we play back to back against the Minnesota Timberwolves, and we're at Minnesota on the 31st, and then we're home against Minnesota on the second, on the first. So we're playing a home and home apparently against the Wolves.
I'll take the win. I'll take two wins against the Timberwolves.
Okay, so that means in that stretch of eight games, you think we're going to go 5-3, which means our record would be 11-10. I was going along the lines of we were going to be 4-4 in that stretch of eight games, and we're still going to be 10-11, hovering right over the 500 mark.
And that's fair.
I mean, listen. I jumped on the Cavs Central podcast with Justin Matcham, also a part of the Hoop Heads Pod Network. I jumped on his podcast, and we were talking about this, and I said, listen, if you would have told me that we were going to play 13 games and we were going to have six wins, I would have told you that you're crazy. Because I put them at 13th in the Eastern Conference, and there's still a chance that they could fall to the 13th in the Eastern Conference. I want to be clear here. It's still a possibility, right, Mike? You agree with that statement? It's still a possibility.
Like, I think... other than Detroit's a mess, the Wizards seem like they're a mess, and I wouldn't be surprised if Bradley Beal gets traded at some point during the season. But you look at all these other teams that are bunched up down by the bottom, and I think you look at right now the Knicks are 6th, Cavs 7th, Hawks 8th, Magic 9th, Charlotte 10th, Chicago 11th, Miami 12th, Toronto 13th. Nobody thinks that Miami is going to end up way down there. Toronto people, I think Toronto's worse than people thought, but I don't think anybody thinks
they're on a roll now though, Mike. They've won three in a row.
Yeah, I'm saying nobody thinks they're going to finish 13th in the Eastern Conference.
And on the other side of the spectrum, you have Orlando who's the last, they were like the last team undefeated, right? And they've lost six in a row. They're pitiful now.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like someone took the magic from them.
Orlando's not good, but they're also not.
Your dog has an opinion on this.
My dog has an opinion. My dog doesn't like the Magic. They're also not horrible. I mean, none of those teams are as awful as they've been in the past. I think the Wizards and the Pistons are the two awful teams. I don't think Atlanta's awful anymore. I don't think Orlando's awful. I don't think Charlotte's awful. I don't think Chicago is awful. I think any of those teams on any given night can beat you. Throw the Cavs. I think if you can keep the Cavs to the upper half of that mix, then they have a chance to be
a 9 or 10 seed, and I think I had him pegged at 11.
You had him 11, yep.
Just outside the play-in, but who knows? Look, if they can sustain this type of defense, I mean, they have trouble scoring, but you know, they've also been missing their best offensive players as well. So,
that's the other piece. If they can get their guys healthy, and this is, I said this on the podcast too with Justin. I said, I do not think you trade Andre Drummond. Because I think even if you have to mortgage the whole fact that we're not going to get anything back from him when he leaves, getting these kids in the playoffs, if we have the opportunity to do so, it is totally 100% worth getting them the experience. Even if it, in my opinion, even if it's in a play-in tournament, it's still playoff experience and it's an opportunity for them to grow as players and as to see the league. This, and I wouldn't have imagined that 2 years off of LeBron, we saw what happened last time LeBron left. 2 years off of LeBron, we would even be talking about the chance for the Cavs making the playoffs, right? Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there, you see that the path is often difficult, and the Cavs have navigated it decently. They've made some good moves around the fringes. I think you can say that the Colin Sexton pick probably is going to turn out to be a pretty good one. Garland, I think the jury is still out on what he's going to be. Okoro, I think, is going to be a good player. I mean, he's averaging, 37 minutes a game or something and playing really good
defense. He's playing more minutes than Giannis.
Yeah, offensively, I'm not sure where he's going to get to. But before we continue with our Cavaliers talk, let's take a break and hear from our sponsors. Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit snapraise.com and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time.
And we're back, and we're going to wrap up our talk about the Cavs. Mike, did you have anything else which you wanted to say about maybe Andre Drummond?
Yeah, I think with Drummond, and you mentioned that you don't want to trade him, and I certainly understand your sentiment of wanting to keep Drummond here to help the team continue to win and maybe get some playoff experience for our young players. I think the Jared Allen trade complicates that at least a little bit, or at least makes the situation a little murkier. Because I think what you have to look at is, one, what can you get for Andre Drummond? What's out there? And we talked about this before. I'm not sure when you look around at the contending teams that might be interested in acquiring a center, there's really not a whole lot of options for places that he can go. What about Portland? Maybe Portland needs him to fill in for Nurkic. Who knows? But what I'm trying to say is that there's not a huge market for Andre Drummond, so I'm not sure what you can get back from him. So you don't want to give him away. So let him play it out. And yet at the same time, I think that if a good deal did materialize and the Cavs thought they could get something that was of value that maybe fit better with their timeline, although again, this is all strange to say because Andre Drummond is 26 and theoretically he could play another 10 years in the league. So to say, oh, he's too old because he's 26 or 27 years old seems a little disingenuous, but that's kind of the way things work in the NBA. Jared Allen's a good player. And if you had to replace Andre Drummond with Jared Allen, I'm not sure that there's a huge drop off in terms of wins and losses from having Drummond out on the floor versus having Jared Allen out on the floor. So I think the Cavs would definitely be willing to entertain a good offer for Andre Drummond. Yet at the same time, I don't think there's any urgency that they have to trade him. And at the end of the season, if Andre Drummond walks away, like, are you going to look at that as a disaster?
No, I'm not, which is why I don't think you trade him.
Right, which I'm feeling the same way. Like, I look at it and I would say, we're going to listen to offers. We're going to take phone calls. We're going to hear what teams have to say. And unless we get something that we really, really, really like, we're going to hold on to Andre Drummond and see what happens in the offseason. And if his contract demands are too high and somebody else meets those demands and he walks and you get no compensation for him, well, now you bring in, you have Jared Allen. If for some reason you get a contract maybe that's less than what he thought he could get on the open market, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to bringing Andre Drummond back. I think he's been very, very good this year. The question becomes, is it a contract year good, or is it something that, hey, this guy really has bought in and could be a part of the team's long-term future? Remains to be seen.
Yeah, I completely agree. All right, so the last thing we want to talk about, I kind of mentioned it in our previous segment about all the cancellations that have been going on. Now, Washington's basically been shut down for quite a while, and they're the team that's faced the biggest amount of games canceled. So since the last time we recorded, we're going to go back to last Wednesday. Washington and the Hornets was canceled. And then, so that was the only game canceled on Wednesday last week. Thursday last week. Oh, wait, hold on. This Wednesday, I'm confused on my dates, Mike. Wednesday the 20th is today. Hold on one second. I'm sorry. So we're going back to Wednesday the 13th. We had Washington and the Jazz postponed. We had the Magic and the Celtics postponed. We had the Hawks and the Suns postponed. Thursday, there were no games postponed. Friday, there was the Washington Pistons postponed, the Grizzlies Timberwolves postponed, and the Warriors Suns postponed. So there's six games in the 2-day or 3-day stretch that were postponed. Then the next game, Indiana Suns were postponed. Then the 17th, which is Sunday, the Cavs Wizards and the 76ers Thunder game was postponed. And then obviously the Cavs Wizards was again postponed on Tuesday or Monday, I mean. And then today we didn't have any games. Weird that on a Tuesday night they only had two games originally scheduled tonight.
Yeah, that was weird. When I looked at the ESPN app tonight, I was going through to take a look at the scores and see who was playing the late game tonight. And yeah, only two games.
And it had to be because of MLK, right? That's why because
they had almost everybody playing the day before. So yeah, I'm pretty sure that's probably why. But it was strange to look at the schedule and only see two games.
And then tomorrow, the Wizards Hornets is postponed already. I think that's the only game that's postponed. So really, all the postponements for the most part have been surrounded by the Hornets. There's been a few other games, like the Sixers had a few games, but for the most part, it's the Wizards that are causing the postponements. So I guess my question to you is, I brought this up on Justin's pod. Like, the NBA didn't have a contingency in plan for all this happening, but why didn't they have a plan in place where a team that was, like, available and not stricken by COVID, you know, the Major League Baseball, they moved the team and they switched the game around. Like, why wouldn't they have considered that? Now, obviously, there is some logistics involved with doing that, and that's probably the main reason, and the money that it would cost to, like, say, okay, Cavs. But so, like, for example, when we had games canceled on Sunday, there had to be, like, the Sixers was canceled and the Cavs was canceled. The Sixers game was played in Thunder. The Cavs game was played in Washington. Why couldn't they figure out a way to get those two teams to play one another, have the Cavs and the Thunder play each other on Sunday? Like, what's preventing them from doing that?
Well, I don't know that there's anything necessarily preventing them. I just think when you start getting into trying to get an entire team traveling party from one place to another, get that all set up, rejigger everything that needs to be reset in order to make that happen, I think it's a lot more challenging than you think, because again, all those decisions are going to kind of be made last minute. And I think that's tough on coaches. I think it's tough on players. And I think the league, if they were to do that, I think they'd be opening up a little bit of a can of worms, in the sense that if every time you're just trying to shift these teams around, how do you balance out the schedule? How do you figure out how many teams have played how many games? And I know that we're probably going to end this season with some teams playing less than whatever the 70-game schedule, depending on how things continue to progress and if more games get postponed. But I just think it's a case where when you just are scheduling on the fly, I mean, think about what high school basketball is like right now, where It's basically, hey, it's the beginning of the week. Call somebody up and see if they can play. If they're available and not quarantining, then, hey, let's play. I think for the NBA to operate that way within their venues, and even though the venues don't have any fans or have very few fans, it's still difficult to be able to move all that stuff around. And you have TV dates and you have all this different, all these different things that kind of go into what makes a game on game day. And I don't know, it's probably harder than we think is my guess to move things around last minute for whatever reason.
All right. I think they could have figured it out if they really wanted to, Mike. Maybe I'm just being...
But maybe they don't want to. I mean, maybe they're just saying, look, here's our schedule. We're trying to stick with it. We know games are going to be postponed. We're okay with it. If we have to end up doing the seeding by winning percentage instead of straight out number of wins because teams don't play the same amount of games, I think so be it. I think they just want to keep things moving. They don't want to have people... Again, if the Cavs were supposed to play at Washington and instead you're going to divert them to go play in Philly, and then what does that look like, and try to sort all that out, and then how do you get Oklahoma City out of there because they need to be quarantined? And
Was it Oklahoma City that was quarantined, or was it Philly? I think it was Philly.
No, it was probably Philly, but I'm just saying, it's just in general, whatever teams you're moving around, I don't know. Is it worth it? I don't know. The NBA obviously decided no at this point.
Yeah. I don't know. I think they could have handled it better. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, it's fair. I mean, I think you can nitpick at this all you want, but again, just like in real life, nobody really knows what the right thing to do is in any of these situations when it comes to the virus and how people are handling it. And so, look, if a couple of postponed games are all it takes for us to be able to get through an NBA season, I think most of us will probably take it.
Yeah, that's true. All right, I don't have anything else. Do you want to touch on the Lakers at all, Mike, and how they lost to the Golden State last night?
I mean, the Lakers are clearly the best team in the league. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And look, it's the NBA. Any team on any given night, if they play well, is capable of beating another team. And I'm not worried about the Lakers. They just seem like, again, they're going to have another gear when it comes to the playoffs. And in the regular season, they're just so much deeper than they were last year and more versatile. And that allows for LeBron to be playing his career low, or at least his low in minutes, for a long, long time. And hopefully that helps to keep him fresh coming out of the bubble and then coming through this season, so that when the playoffs roll around, that he's ready to go. And if he is, then the Lakers have got to be the prohibitive favorite to win the title again. And they're off to a good start. I think you look at the league as a whole, and I think it's pretty much the Lakers and everybody else. I think everybody else is at least a tier below the Lakers based on how things have gone to this point.
Yep, I agree. And the thing is this. I'll be honest with you. I feel like a dummy because today at school we were talking, and I said, oh, man, I watched the first quarter of that Lakers game, and I knew it was over, so I turned it off, and the kid looked at me and said, well, you know the Warriors won, right? And I'm like, what? How is that even possible? Like, I literally went to bed. The Lakers were up 15 or 16 in the first quarter. How is that even possible? And they're like, I don't know. And then obviously I didn't believe them. So I looked up the article and I was like, oh, well, that's how they won. They completely played terrible in the fourth quarter. And they were up 19 points in the late third, early fourth, right? If I'm not incorrect, Mike, is that correct?
I think you're right. Yep.
So I'm not worried. I think the Lakers are the best team for sure. So it's a loss, and they'll be okay.
Nobody's gone through an NBA season undefeated, so you're going to lose games, and it happens. And I think, without question, the Lakers have the best roster, and they still have the best player. And when you have those two things, as long as you can stay healthy, then you got a pretty good shot at holding up the trophy whenever this season ends, whether July, August, whatever the prospective end date is going to be. I would expect that, barring injury, I would expect the Lakers to be holding that trophy again.
I completely agree with you. All right.
You agreed with me a lot today. I must have said a lot of good things tonight.
Listen, you're a smart man, Mike Klinzing.
You kept agreeing with me, so that's good.
You're a smart man, so I'm going to agree with you.
It's good to agree. All right. Thanks for listening.
Hey, listen, Mike, remember, today/tomorrow, we're all about unifying. And getting back what was once America. All right, that's what they're going to say. We're unifying.
Is that what we're saying?
That's what's
unifying.
You know, we're going to all agree today. That's what we're going to do, Mike.
All right, we're the great unifiers. We are the unifiers. That's why we agree. So that sounds like a good plan to me. We appreciate listening to our weekly NBA pod. If you are looking for more NBA content, please check out the rest of our shows on the Hoopheads Pod Network. We have a bunch of team-focused NBA pods, which you can find by going to hoopheadspod.com. Check out all the great shows that we have. Constantly looking to add more and grow. By the end of 2021, we hope to be in every NBA market and have a show for you to listen to, so you can check out your favorite team on the Hoopheads Pod Network. In the meantime, we're going to keep plugging away here with our weekly NBA shows, Jason and I, and our twice weekly interviews. So look for our next one coming up on Friday with Aaron and Josh from 19.9 Vintage College Basketball Apparel. Really cool stuff that those guys have. So check that one out. And we appreciate listening tonight. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com. to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.